listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, Babylon, a 2022 film directed by Damien Chazelle. Yusuf, this was your pick this week. Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was absolutely amazing and underrated. I don't get why people are like, it feels like it's slept on. Mm-hmm.
The main discourse I saw, like even before it came out, was people going like, oh, the ending is very pretentious. And I kind of already kind of had an idea of, well, how he would end it.
Yeah, you predicted it completely accurately.
I mean, it's how? I feel like that's...
But except the color stuff.
Yeah, except the color stuff. I was like, this will be like a celebration of cinema. And people are saying how wild the ending is. I was like, he's going to jump ahead. He's going to showcase what happens after. And that's exactly what happened. I was like, okay, it's good.
But that's kind of not even the end too, right? Mm. Like, then he goes to, what's his name? the main guy.
Mine.
And his kid. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the epilogue. Wait, yeah. We're talking about the actual epilogue, like the clip show of like all the films.
Wait, was the clip show after?
No, it was at the watching end.
Singing in the Rain.
It was during. He's watching Singing in the Rain,
and then it goes back, like,
fades
and then,
in.
Yeah.
Because it goes into like, and it shows you what's coming. Mm. I love that. Yeah. What's coming.
Should have ended with like some guy putting on a VR headset and calling a 12-year-old the N-word. That's kind of the future of mass media. No,
that is the future. He just cuts to TikTok and it ends on TikTok. He will become a horror.
Yeah, it should. You're
like,
should
oh my god, this is where we're going.
Something like that.
Michelle, what did you've seen this the most times out of all of us? You've seen
this
is your fourth time watching.
This is my fourth time. I love this. I think this is the best film I saw last year. Like, it makes me excited. I feel very excited about cinema and about like. Life. I think it's misunderstood a lot, potentially. And I also think the marketing was very strange because they made it out to be this like crazy, hectic party movie because that's all they showed in the trailer. And that it's not, that's the first 20 minutes, but that's it. I don't know if it was trying to like lure people in with a misconception and being like, hey, look at this. But then no one saw it. Because we went the day it came out. And there was also a big storm that day. But also we were just like five people.
Yeah, it was... We were there at opening day and it was... We were
just five people.
Yeah. It's even more embarrassing because before the movie started, Margot Robbie appears like, hi, everybody. We're very happy that like you're seeing Babylon the way it's intended. And a big screen with a fully energized crowd. And we're like, oh, no. It's like, there's no one here. God. Oh, Jesus Christ. This is not going well.
Good.
I loved it too. It's, the main guy is so good. I love his new protagonist. It feels so similar to, it feels very structurally, it feels like a natural conclusion from like La La Land to this. This is like the realization.
Which is interesting because this was conceived of before La La Land.
Like, oh, it was?
Yeah, he pitched this to a producer who told him that's too ambitious. Maybe write something that you like about music. Maybe make a musical because you're obviously interested in that. And then he wrote La La Land, couldn't get that made, and then made Whiplash, and then made La La Land, and then I guess First Man somehow, and then this.
That makes a lot of sense. I think he's improved with every single movie. You look at something like Whiplash, and then you look at this, like, oh my god, this guy has... It's so much more ambitious. The scale is... this, and he transitions seamlessly into this, like, more epic form of filmmaking. Why do you think he gets so much hate? A lot of people really dislike his movies and really dislike...
I mean, a lot
this
of
one
stuff.
Or all of them?
I think all of them.
Well, earlier, it's like, why people approach, like... using jazz in a way that's not really recognizing that black people ever had a part of it. And there's also, like, you can arguably say his women characters before this film were quite weak and they weren't fleshed out that much. And also, they're very white films. This feels like he's massively trying to correct all of that.
Yeah.
By everything he's been criticized about, he's trying to be like, hey, I'm going to fill everything about it. But it doesn't feel like he's trying to make a point either. Because it works.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the jazz, the makeup part, the makeup sequence? When he asked, like, the black jazz player to put on the...
That's brutal.
Brutal. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Very uncomfortable. But I think, like, at the same time, like, what is he trying to highlight about success? What is he trying to say about it? Because I think if you view it from Manny's journey, he starts out being very enamored by it. He just wants to work on the set. And when he does, he becomes an executive. He becomes a person, like, he fires, like, the Chinese... the Chinese girl. He tells, like, he forces the makeup, charcoal makeup, onto the African American.
He doesn't force it. It's about
the
money.
He basically does. The way he, like, kind of rationalizes it,
it's about the money, and he is being forced to do it, or, like, the picture will get shut down. Like, that's what he's told. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of messed up that he says to the guy, like, all these people's families are relying on this money, so if you don't do this, they're not going to get anything. That's a bit messed up.
But I think that was the only card he could play at that point. Because it is, like, I think he understands how disgusting this is to ask him to do that. And that's, like, he's like, oh, because the only way I can really convince him is if I guilt him, like, directly into it. What, Yusuf, I'm sure you can't catch the many, many, many nods to PTA movies.
Well, I was gonna ask you about the opening sequence, the party. That's obviously Boogie Nights inspired, but
and a shot referencing Phantom Thread, the very last shot at the end of the party. You see them dance, like, the empty ballroom, the stragglers dancing in the empty ballroom. That's a reference to the New Year's Eve's sequence in Phantom Thread. And there's little touches, like Catherine Waterson shows up. She's Shasta Faye in Inherent Vice. Like, she's British in this, which I thought was so funny. I was like, oh, I know you. It's somebody else. There's a sequence when he, like, slams the phone and it pushes in. And it's all blue. That kind of reminds me a lot of Punch Drunk Love. The sequence is in the mattress store. It's interesting. If it never overtakes the movie or overshadows it, I was just like, okay, he obviously respects PTA a lot. But who wouldn't? Like, if you get to make a movie, if you get to make homage to a certain contemporary director, makes sense to me. Did you like
the music? I love the music. Listen to the soundtrack. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen to the soundtrack a bunch. And, you know what was amazing? That the title, movie's title appears, like, 30 minutes into the movie. That's one of the things that I noticed, the observation that I have come up with. That Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt don't really, like, I thought the movie was about them interacting or something.
And
it kind of just doesn't even... That was also, I think what Michelle said about the marketing being deceiving is sort of the big problem here, because it kind of does come across as a movie about Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie party and create this wild, Hollywood epic thing, but it's kind of not that at all.
No, it's...
But I don't think, how would you market it otherwise?
Yeah, it's about how success choose, like, no, this industry choose people up.
I don't think it is.
And when,
I don't think it's that cynical.
Yeah, I don't think either.
I thought it was pretty cynical. Sorry.
People speak. Yusuf, you would say.
I just think it should be it was, like, kind of a more hopeful thing, but it's highlighting how we got here. Like, it's there was a lot of people, like, whose necks were, you know, stepped on to get
exactly
places.
Stepped on.
But I think the marketing should have been like, oh, it's a sad movie about old Hollywood. And then when people would go in and be like, whoa, it's full of, like, partying and stuff. And then word of mouth would be like, yo, this movie's actually legitimately fun. Like, undersell it. Because I think people went in with the expectation of it be a party movie.
They should have sold it more as a prestige picture for the awards.
They were trying to oversell it as, like, a party thing. Because I do still like the general... thing it's trying to say is like look back at cinema. Like, there's a lot of other things. It's just like this entire myth of cinema as well, like the whole Babylon,
the
like the towers don't exist. Is it the Tower of Was that? The Hanging Gardens, whatever it is. They don't exist, but the myth of it continues, and that's what cinema is. Like, there's no...
And they will never die. Yeah.
Unfortunately, not everyone knows who Charlie Chaplin is today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people still do. And that's, like, this is what it's saying. And I think there's also, like, I would have liked them to name drop. Mm-hmm. Maybe, or put, like, actual characters in. But I understand that, like, they didn't do that. Because it's about the myth. And if they put people in it, then it's going to be like, well, that's inaccurate. This is inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And it becomes like a biopic.
Yes.
But I think also after Emma Stone couldn't do it, they had to rework a lot of the Margot Robbie stuff to make it.
Yeah.
Like oh my God, I just realized that's why.
Yeah.
Emma Stone probably would have done a Clara Bow character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I read the original script and it's much more like... trying to make direct allegory, like direct references to historical figures. Margot Robbie's character was originally Clara Bow, who is a real silent film star. But they changed it. I think that was when Emma Stone was first attached. And then I think once that didn't end up happening, he started workshopping a little bit more and trying to detach, move away from that, which is the right move, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
The other thing was that forgot.
It's okay. You'll come back. That sequence when I love that scene when Brad Pitt visits the critic one last time, and she tells him like it's like there's you want to know why they were laughing. Like, there is no reason. Like times change, taste changed.
I thought that was too melodramatic. I didn't like that. That's more you, Arvin.
Exactly. That is more the writing. It gets like very much like you'll be dancing among the ghosts. So like, yes,
I'm more crocodile in the dungeon thing.
That was great too.
I love that.
You showed that like that.
No, I didn't. I thought it was too much. I would have cut that.
But
it became a different movie. I love how it became just like suddenly. See, it became. Mm-hmm.
I think it has something for each of us.
Yes.
And our sort of interconnected, you know, cinephile sort of obsession or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like a giant web or like a tent that houses all the things we like about movies.
Yeah.
And everyone has their own corner. And I think that's what works because... I really, really can't get over, like, a huge part of it was just me nerding out at someone, you know, visualizing all these, like, you know, salacious rumors and stuff that I've always, like, you know, read about. So it felt like a nerd's dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, I know you love silent films and stuff, so that's probably, like, a part of it.
Yeah,
it's like always seeing behind the scenes of that.
Although
I love the transit.
You love what?
Well, I was just gonna say the best scene for me, my favorite scene, was them trying to shoot the first audio movie with her.
Mm-hmm.
That
Perfect.
One was my favorite scene. I thought it was amazingly cut together. It was like so patient and yet at the same time it just got you like worked up. It was amazing. I can't believe he pulled that off.
When the assistant director started screaming, you feel like screaming with him. He's like, can we just move on? Can we just get this right? I love, because I think he demonstrated how hard it actually is to make a movie. He shows the entire audience. Like, I think, I love that for people who aren't really interested in how movies are. I would like to think of this as like an opportunity to show them like, no, it's not just like stand in front of the camera and just say fun, fancy words. There's so much work that goes into it. And so many things that you don't even consider while when you watch a movie. And
it's also like how different silent cinema was to sounds. It's such a huge difference.
Yeah. And it kind of showcases why she can't adapt. Because she's spontaneous and she's like, you know, she's instantly in the moment.
I mean, they don't go into that too much. They mostly say it's her voice.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I love how she does the same voice. American voice in every movie now. I guess it's just the one that she knows how to do. But does she talk the exact same way in I, Tonya?
I don't know.
I forgot. It's been a long time since that movie. Brad Pitt was amazing in this.
Yeah, and it was... He was cancelled.
Too bad he got cancelled, because I felt a lot of this... This is one of his better performances in recent years.
What? Brad Pitt got cancelled?
Yeah, there were some... Well, he didn't really... I think he's going to get away mostly unscathed, but... Yeah. It's just the allegations with his marriage of Angelina Jolie, and how he was potentially not the greatest and peaceful husband.
Did he hit the kids or something?
I don't think he hit the kids, but like, he was not a great dad and not a great husband, according to the rumors.
Oh, but well, still. I could have told you that.
To be honest, you're like, yeah, big surprise. Like,
I thought he was like sleeping with younger women or something.
Yeah, but they all do. Which is why.
Oh, see, none of this is gonna matter if that's our reaction.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just none of it doesn't matter.
I mean, it does.
Yeah, no, it does, but I mean, like, everyone's just gonna be like, I thought that was implied.
Yeah,
that comes with the territory. Yusuf, did you know that the director, the blonde director in those sequences, director Margot Robbie, that's Damien Chazelle's wife?
Oh, yeah, I think I looked it up.
I was like, who is she? I've never seen her before, because I thought she was Zoe Bell at first from the Tarantino movies. I was like, oh no, it's not. She was much younger. Who is she? Oh, is his wife. His stand-in, effectively, in the movie, which I thought was really cute.
Yeah.
Do we have anything more to add?
No, I think that's it.
No.
I feel like I do, but I can't.
I wish I could spend so long talking about the music. It's so good. It's one of my favorite movie scores.
I mean, I like that he shows that there's more going on in Hollywood than just, like, famous white people. Like, that they did use the same sets to make Spanish versions with Spanish actors, usually overnight, from when they were shooting in the day with the white people.
Yeah, that's true. That's something you don't see a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, like, the Chinese lady who was really good.
Yeah. All right. Shall we move on? Take a break.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seven reels, everybody. Let's rate them up.
I'm gonna go 6.5 also, if that's what you said.
7 out of 7 for me. I really liked it.
Perfect movie.
Everything is a 10 out of 10 from technical level, on like the story to like the music, the music and the way the characters interact with the music. Not many directors will put this much attention into like making sure all these things like are so cohesive and tells and just so like intent on doing just one thing correctly. I loved it. Yeah. Well, that brings us to what we've been watching this week.
I haven't seen much, to be honest.
We watched one of the Oscar best nominated foreign films called an Irish film, because most of it is in Irish, called The Quiet Girl. It's okay. It's very, it's like a very very simple, very kind of like gentle story.
I liked it.
Kind of baffles me why it got nominated over Decision to Leave, but.
I mean, I think it's also like a Irish language.
Yes.
Film, just like, probably very few of those. Mm-hmm.
Actually, the most fascinating part of movies to watch a movie where English is like the second language, and when people characters are speaking English, that's indicative of them being an outsider.
Yeah,
I thought that was so well done, and they never really call attention to it. You just kind of pick up on it as the movie goes along, and that was really nice. Yeah. Well, if we haven't been watching that much this week, let's just move on to the next segment of what our recommendations are. Who wants to go first?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I recommend Cinema Paradiso.
Ooh.
That's a good one.
Because it's also like this love of cinema, looking back, and big montage at the end of all the kissing sequences that the priest took out because he thought they were inappropriate for the village. And then the little boy puts them all together.
That's nice.
It's good.
You said, what's your recommendation?
It's The Artist. I have not seen it, but I heard good things, so if you want to watch it and then, you know, message me, be like, ooh, it's worth watching, then that's good. I'll try it out.
My recommendation is Under the Silver Lake.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. Isn't that a hoody horror film?
No, it's not. It's kind of hits back on the same message of it's bigger than. We all try to see, like, think that we can get on top of our passion of art, and and there's a deeper meaning, and we can decipher it, and there's messages only for us. It's so personal to us, but sometimes we just have to take a step back and realize it's bigger than you.
So there's...
That's why I thought it was a good parallel. Also set up a movie about LA. Yeah, sorry.
There's a YouTube video that John Green made once. It's called something like the world's largest ball of paint, because it is a place in America where someone... It started with a baseball and it's a father and son. They just painted layers onto this one baseball, and now it's like a gigantic because people can come and paint a single layer. And then John Green makes this whole analogy of like, if you create art, you're just creating a layer on the ball. You know, you're helping the next person, but like realistically you're not gonna stick around forever. You're just helping the progress.
That makes sense, to be honest. Yeah.
That brings us to what we will be watching next week. Next week, we're going to be watching another Best Picture nominee. Well, actually, Babylon wasn't even nominated for Best Picture, which is a travesty. Should have been.
Yeah, it's so weird that what you're about to announce was... And this thing. Yes.
And Top Gun.
Yeah, and Top Gun. We're watching Elvis, Baz Luhrmann's latest epic. I really, really liked it. You said you haven't seen it yet, and I can't wait to find out what you think.
I'm very excited. Love it from the man who brought us The Great Gatsby.
I love The Great Gatsby, though.
The one with Leo?
Yeah.
I don't remember it being good, but maybe I'm not.
That was like my film that got me.
I love Moulin Rouge, so like that's how I've always loved him for Moulin Rouge.
Or like Poo on Stooge, that's you, Poo on you.
That's me.
It's bad.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Stay tuned and join us for Elvis next week.
Bye.
The 7th Reel is hosted by Arvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf Al-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim, and our outro music is composed by Yahya Al-Bashir. Thanks for listening.